Legal research, this is your guide for week number 9 as we come back from spring break. This is a review because we've covered this topic before. And so you need to have read the chapter as outlined on the syllabus. And then after reading the chapter, reviewing your notes from the first 8 weeks, then start this guide. Now, what we're going to talk about and really very briefly is locating cases through annotated law reports. And at this point in time, my expectation is that you should be able to summarize the process of finding and using annotations in the research process, including being able to identify the 4 things we must do every time we look to and rely on annotations of this type, primarily because we've covered this before a few times now. So this is one of those things that you have to keep in your memory. And not only that, but make it a practice, a process that you follow every time to avoid bad things from happening to you or your supervising lawyer. Now, just to review annotation sources, so the primary one that we use is the publisher-provided annotations, the versions of statutes that are provided by Lexis or West or a provider like that, that then that publisher takes the time and provides as part of their service annotations, references to those annotation resources. Now, we're primarily looking, when we're looking at a statute, a case. We want cases. That's what we're using the annotations to find, so we can have cases that can back up our position or our argument regarding a particular statute, typically to a tribunal, a court. There are also annotations found in secondary sources like ICL, which you're very familiar with now, ALR, and some reliable web-based secondary sources. And we've explored some of those. But most of the time, it's going to be when you've pulled up a statute in Lexis or Westlaw, and then you just page down and you're looking at all that fine work they've done for us. At this time, I want you to listen to what I'm going to say and look at the slide that I've provided. If you need to, you don't have to, but I want you to stop what you're doing right now. I want you to take out a piece of blank paper, and this is a self-quiz. Put your name on the top left-hand corner, your date on the top right-hand corner, just like as if you're in class. And I want you to list the 4 things we must do anytime we attempt to use annotations of any type to help us find case law. List those 4 things. You know these things. If you don't know these things, it's a good time to figure out which of these things you don't know, and then take the time to get to know them and develop that memory knowledge. So you have a checklist internally, and then go through and do these things. So I'll give you a few minutes. Pause the guide right now and just take 2 minutes to list these 4 things. Now, you're on your honor, and I hope that you tried that from memory, and I hope you've done what I asked. Now, put that piece of paper aside, and as you come back to what we have just discussed, I want to focus our attention a little bit on an ethics alert. Now, this is something we've also talked about many times already in the first 8 weeks. Annotations are great sources to assist us in finding cases. However, you may not cite to those annotations, and you must read the cases to which you're directed. Never quote from or rely on the annotation or summary of the case provided by the publisher or whoever produced that annotation. You have to find that case, open that case, read the case, and analyze the case. And then verify, shepherdize that case. Make sure it's still good. And then follow that trail. Okay, follow the trail to wherever it may lead. And only after doing these things can you cite the case's authority. It's just what you have to do. You remember the story I shared of the case my law school buddy drug me into in the Quad Cities, and the lawyer who was doing businesses discount injury law and tried to lie about missing the statute of limitations despite documentation that proved he was in fact representing, or held himself out as representing, my client, who's this sweet little old lady who relied on this lawyer. And when he blew the statute of limitations, he didn't pay attention to when the statute was in the past, and the insurance company said, well, we're not paying your claim. My friend asked if I would take the matter on, knowing that it would probably be a loser in so far as being able to collect. But we did in fact collect, and that lawyer had a lawyer who was representing him in this malpractice case that I filed. And the lawyer representing the lawyer who had committed malpractice came into court, and in response to a motion for summary judgment I had filed on the issue of whether or not there was an attorney-client relationship, because the lawyer kept denying that there ever was, and based on uncontroverted testimony and documents that in fact proved that there was that relationship, we cited case law. The lawyer representing the malpractice committing lawyer relied on an annotation as a means of providing a point of law he was relying on, or he wanted to argue in front of the court. That case that he pulled out of an annotation, and who knows, that was back when the annotations, when this was before really a lot of legal research being done online, the internet hadn't really taken off, and we're using dial-up modems, so people were still pulling books, and so there were pocket parts, and I've talked about the pocket parts before. They went to the back of the statute books until such time as there was too much, and then they opened up or published more volumes and separated things out. And in any event, there were pocket parts, and that's what he relied on, and he didn't shepherdize. I don't think he read the entire case, but he definitely didn't shepherdize, because he relied on an appellate court district case that was overturned by the Supreme Court of Illinois. And so eventually what happened there, and I think I've shared this before, is in a really uncomfortable scenario in which I won my motion, but the judge looked at me and said, counsel, you have an obligation to report what just went on here to the ARDC. And unfortunately, so do I. And so then that, you know, caused me to have to go and testify in that matter, where the initial lawyer, the first lawyer, was disbarred, and the other lawyer faced some penalties as well. So not ideal, but completely, for the second lawyer, avoidable. Completely avoidable. So keep that in mind. So as you pull out your piece of paper now, you know, compare what you wrote on the self-quiz, be honest. And on your pre-class assignment for this week, report what you had correct and what you had wrong. It won't impact your grade, but failing to be honest, failing to know and follow these expectations, that's going to impact your employment, as hopefully that last example will bear out. You don't want to be in that predicament. I don't want to read about you in that predicament. So, what are the four things? You must find the case. Open the case. You must read the entire case. So find is one, read the case is two. You must analyze the entire case. And then you must verify the case, shepherdize the case as being good law. And then into the research cycle we go. Same cycle we follow every time. So you have to do that. No shortcut, no way around it, no opportunities to do anything, but it keeps your butt out of the ethics and malpractice sling. It protects your boss, and it helps you reach a productive and long career. That's what we're focused on this week, annotations, week 10 or week 9. As I told you, the back half of this class goes really fast. So keep your energy up, keep your focus, and we'll keep moving along.